Okay, well, I was going to thank the organizers for inviting me to this fantastic workshop, and it's been a special pleasure to be here because I was actually, I think, quite productive. I've done some work with Andrew Green, which is what I'm going to talk about today. So it's really hot off the press, which means also for the audience that if anyone spots any factors of 7 pi squared over 12, you can leave an anonymous note in the pigeonhole and be very grateful. So, well, the full title actually should be Holographic Noise Near Quantum Critical Points. And, right, so I will give you an introduction about what systems we're looking at. In particular, we also want to look at this out of equilibrium. And then, well, I will jump straight to some specific setup, which is the D3D5 system, and I will show you how to get the nonlinear conductivity there under a strong applied electric field. And this is some work which has already been reported on in the literature by Andreas Karch and collaborators. But then I will extend that, in particular, to studying the current noise in this setup using a Langevin type approach, which I think is particularly interesting for this 2 plus 1 dimensional system, because we actually find out that this nonlinear conductivity is not terribly exciting, but you can actually learn more about the system by going to the fluctuations. And then I'll have some conclusions. Okay, so the overall goal is essentially to use ADS-CFT to describe transport near quantum critical points. That's just the QCP, quantum critical points, and in fact even out of equilibrium. And so today I will tell you about some work which studies the current noise in systems which have been termed by Karch and collaborators and holographic metals. Okay, so I'll go straight to the introduction. All right, so I think it's fair to say that there is lots of interest in studying strongly correlated systems. We all know many examples. For instance, QCD in certain parts of its phase diagram, high-temperature superconductors. So, for instance, also the superfluid insulator transition, which is actually something that I will make some connections to today. But it is very hard to make progress. And in particular, it's very hard to make progress if you also look at this out of equilibrium. So actually, I think, again, it's fair to say that very few general principles are really known about out of equilibrium strongly correlated systems. And sort of the hope, and perhaps even suggested in some of what I'm reporting on today, is that looking at systems which have holographic duals at least will give us some idea as to what kind of general principles could emerge there. And there are some particularly interesting, I think, ways of looking at this problem which come out of our study. So, again, staying with a slightly more general point is that one area where there is some control also just from the point of view of just condensed matter systems, so one area with some control is basically this topic of quantum critical points, where you have some emergent scaling. Which is very helpful. So the correlation length, for instance, will diverge as you choose some coupling to a critical value with a specific characteristic exponent minus nu. And at the same time, some energy scale vanishes with a typically unrelated characteristic exponent z times nu. And we all know that z is typically what is called a dynamical critical exponent. And there is no reason to think that it is any particular nice value in general. But today, and that also links to the superfluid insulated transition, I will actually be studying systems where this z is equal to 1. Okay, so for instance, for such systems, you can actually study the nonlinear conductivity. And study this nonlinear conductivity sigma and the associated noise, current noise Sj, at the superfluid insulator transition. And basically what one does there is one looks at the fixed point theory, which is something like the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, and one looks at it in a large n expansion. So this is like a vector like O n, large n expansion. So using O n model. As I said, this is sort of related to this Wilson-Fischer fixed point. So this is work that Andrew Green did with Shivaji Zondi, and also then later on with Joel Moore and Vishwana. And basically what they did was they used some previous results of Sachdev, and they essentially coupled this OM model asymmetrically to the applied field, so that sort of order one number of degrees of freedom were coupled to this field, and the rest acts as a heat bath. And so, okay, so using O n model coupled to the strong applied field, E field. And then you can use basically a sort of Boltzmann equation for the transport, but you can implement it in this large n expansion. And what they found was that the current, so J is equal to, in general now, some nonlinear function times E, where actually it turns out that in 2 plus 1 dimensions, so let's say D is equal to 2 plus 1, in 2 plus 1 dimensions, sigma is actually a constant, which is computable within this 1 over n expansion. Maybe I should say, so this is work of Green and Zondi, but also I think work by Dalidovich and Phillips came to a similar conclusion using some different techniques. But what is more exciting, because just a nonlinear function which is equal to essentially 1 is not a particularly revealing feature of a system, if you actually study the current noise, and this Sj we will get to later, and it's some way of characterizing the noise in the system. Basically, you can argue that this given is proportional to the temperature times some function, which is actually a function of the dimensionless ratio of some effective temperature, which depends on the electric field and T, where in the strong field limit, the effective temperature, and this is something that we should take note of, basically goes like the square root of the applied field E. So, in a sense, I think the message to take here is that at least in these 2 plus 1 dimensional systems, it's actually more revealing to study something like the current noise, the fluctuations, because they can reveal something more interesting. So, for instance, this is not, you know, a thermal result, where it would just be proportional to the temperature. And there is sort of a characteristic dependence on the applied field, which is e to the 1/2 here. And so in a sense, you know, that is a way of characterizing transport near this particular quantum critical point.
That's actually scale.
Yeah, so this is related to So I will tell you a little bit about this current Langevin equation, which I will do later. But it's essentially related to the two-point retarded correlation function of the current fluctuation. So it's an integral of that.
Okay. Being proportional to the square root. You still don't, Eva?
Sorry, I'm being slow. So the
conductivity, I think you'll be thinking about some kind of Kubo formula where you get the conductivity by studying the, you know, the two-point function of the current. But here, what we have is we have a system which is out of equilibrium by applying a strong field E, and then what we're looking at is basically the fluctuations which are induced. Well, I mean, so this Langevin equation that you set up has some noise correlation, okay? And this noise correlation, so it's like a noise term that comes in on the right-hand side of this Langevin equation, which is psi, but because of a particular relation that we can derive, that basically is related to the two-point function of the current, but, you know, expanding around the nonlinear background. Okay.
Can I take some order of limits?
I think there are some order of limit things going on, yes. But what in particular do you have in mind?
Maybe I'll get to that.
Okay. You were.
I wasn't sure. What were you saying? Why the noise is important? That's.
Well, it's not important. It's kind of more revealing. So you know, even if you had the system, you know, you studied this conductivity near equilibrium, some kind of linear response calculation, you would find that the conductivity is some constant. So it's not particularly revealing that you're out of equilibrium. You still get some constant. Okay, the constant is slightly different, but it's a constant. But this noise is something which is very different to the near equilibrium situation.
I'm sorry. Are we thinking about some time-dependent background here? Because
so again, I will get exactly to that. Actually, what we're looking at is
because you have E,
an out of equilibrium steady state.
So you're going to accelerate that.
No, so there will be. So generally, that's correct. So you would expect the system to, you know, so you inject energy and basically you. Physically speaking, you have Joule heating, and the thing should start becoming strongly time-dependent. But you can say that either you study the system on timescales, which are much smaller than this expansion rate, or, well, I mean, actually, both of these are equivalent, or I take a limit in which basically a non-equilibrium steady state can be reached, and that's the one that I'm studying. And in this holographic setup, in the string theory setup, that will translate to basically the probe limit of the brain.
I'm sorry. Do you have some sort of sink of energy?
Exactly. So the sink of energy here.
Conditions, for example.
I think morally speaking, here the sink of energy is the, you know, the order of n degrees of freedom, and only order one are coupled to the field, so they can dissipate energy to this path. But in the system that I'm looking at, it's I think even clearer because we're going to have nf probe brains, but nc. Brains that make up the background, so you know that background is, well, because we're in the probe brain limit, it's basically the story of, for instance, the trailing string. I mean, it's very similar to the trailing string where you can pump energy into the system, and just because you're forcing yourself to be in the probe limit, there is a steady state. But generally speaking, you would expect that once you take into account back reaction, then the thing will become strongly time dependent.
And one more thing, how do I read the constant thing? You mean sigma is constant even in a case where E is macroscopic?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the same thing will happen in the probe brain system, and there I will go through the derivation and you'll see where it's coming from. Okay, so but basically, another, another interesting fact to just note down, because we will return to this, is that basically two limits of this are known. So one limit is where, so of this function phi. So the limit, as I take the field very large, of this function phi. Okay, this one we already know. This one is basically square root e over t, and the limit in which I, well, say the temperature dominance of this t is basically just equal to the constant. Okay, and so, well, one of the nice outcomes, I think, of the computation that I will show you now is that we can actually get an interpolating function. So we'll get a function which, in those two limits, looks exactly like what we have here, but we actually have a function which interpolates between these two limits. And so the idea is now that we look at a different system.
So this constant is related to the diffusion
theorem? So that will be sort of an equilibrium result, right? You're thinking of this sort of Einstein relation.
Isn't that true when you turn the electric field to zero?
Yes.
This constant is basically the diffusion constant.
It is in the limit where you get the usual fluctuation dissipation, but you don't get that in out of equilibrium usually, right? So I'm not sure if I can just say yes, but I know what you mean, and I think it's correct.
But you're saying it's out of equilibrium even when you turn the electric field to zero?
No, it's not, but that's not the result that I'm interested in.
I'm sorry, you just answered my question, because I was going to say that E going to zero limit is probably the new equilibrium.
That's right.
Yeah, probably related to true Einstein relation. Mm-hmm.
So again, within the probe brain calculation, that can be explicitly shown.
So should it, how would it fit to think of phi as some kind of non-equilibrium analogous of diffusion constant?
That's interesting that you say that. Let's say I don't know, but there's actually some unrelated work that I did in which something like that came up. Maybe we can talk about that. But I think that might be a good thing where, you know, it's not a constant. It can be basically by dimensional analysis, this diffusion constant doesn't have to be a constant anymore. It can be a non-trivial function. But as you take the limit, appropriate limit, it becomes that diffusion constant that you know. I think that's probably true. So we turn to a different system, which is NF flavor. I say the two brains, but really I mean the five. In the background, well, I mean the five for this talk, but these calculations are actually, technically speaking, quite easy to do for general P and Q. So in the background of NC DP brains, and I mean DP now. And basically, this is this setup which Karsh and O'Bannon have hypothesized or introduced this metallic ADS CFT, and have actually studied a lot of these nonlinear transport properties. However, not really looked at the noise, which I think in this case is actually the interesting quantity to look at. And so basically, we use this as a holographic system. In which we address the analogous questions. I suppose that the hope here is also that it's a different system, but we could still answer some, general principle questions that are related to what I was saying here, just out of equilibrium transport. And somehow these systems are really under a very good analytical control, so they are very nice to look at. And I think it is certainly curious, as we will see relatively soon, that we find some similarities, at least in limits where the computation was known also in the other context. Okay, so now let me describe to you this calculation in the D3 to 5 system. So D3 to 5 setup and 2 plus 1 dimensional metallic criticality. So we consider the following setup. We look at our usual brain stack intersections. So NCD3s and NFD5s. And we put these D3s here. and then we put the D5s here, then we skip this guy. And, okay, so I should maybe put some labels on coordinates, just the name, so T, X, Y, Z, then some radial type coordinate that I call U, and then the angular part. So we have two more directions for this, and maybe I should indicate those. And so this, essentially, on this intersection is this 2 plus 1 dimensional field theory that we're interested in. And then we have also the, morally speaking, the RNG direction here. So this is the 2 plus 1 field theory. This is our RNG direction, and then we wrap another S2 inside this S5. So this is all well known and studied. There is a surrounding metric, which I think I don't need to write down for you. I think one thing that is quite interesting and for later purposes is that this background, so there is, you know, there's a metric and a flux and so on. So these D3 brains will form some kind of geometry, and we look at the D5 brains just as probes, which had some DBI action in it. But the temperature, basically, you can get from the fact that there is a horizon in the background metric. Okay, maybe I should write that explicitly. So the background D3, non-extremal D3, has horizon at UH, and UH is basically related to the temperature as pi times that temperature. Okay, so I will always refer to that temperature as just T, whereas there will be effective temperatures, we'll have either effective here or in a minute also a star, which is a slightly different effective temperature. Okay, and so now we put NF much less than NC, the 5 brains, in this geometry. Okay, so these have an action which you all know. So there will be some normalization factor, and then we have the square root of minus the determinant of the induced metric plus the flux. And there would also be a Wessel-Minot term here, which doesn't play a role in what I have to say. And I want to integrate over the directions of the world volume, which I did not back see. So now we apply a strong field, or apply a field in, say, the x direction. So we choose the vector potential to be minus E times T, and then we have some function which depends on U, dx, so I call that AX of U. So apply field in the x direction. And then actually embedding, solving that minimal surface, some flux equation here is basically reduced. Okay, so the D5 embedding is then determined of U, which basically describes the position of this S2 inside the S5, and both of these are functions just of the radius. But what is nice here is that we can actually always choose a solution. So theta of U is equal to 0 is always a solution of this of these equations. Particularly theta of U has some kind of interpretation as a mass term for the flavors in this background NC or the NC squared gauge theory. So we're looking at the case where they have zero mass. So now we have basically boiled down the system to just studying the equation of AX. And that's, again, simplified by noticing that AX enters this action as a cyclic coordinate. So basically, we can solve for AX primed as a square root, some kind of quadrature, where we have an integration constant that I call C. And we have now the components of the ambient metric I will denote by capital G. So times E squared plus GTT GXX divided by the ambient metric GTT times the same integration constant c squared plus gyy gdt. And now what you notice is that this should be a real quantity. So because the numerator can change sign, as you can convince yourself by looking at the specific forms of this, it will change sign at some specific point, u is equal to u star. So that means for it to stay real, also the denominator has to change sign at that same point. So basically, I define this special point, u is equal to u star, which is the point where the numerator vanishes, and then basically demanding that the denominator vanishes at the same time gives us a relation which is basically e squared is equal to c squared times a quotient of gxx over gyy, which, by the way, is just 1, at this special point. And so this means that e squared is equal to c squared. And then by studying basically the usual ADS-CFT prescription for how to extract various quantities in the field theory from the boundary behavior, we actually see that c is essentially the current in that direction, jx, and it's over the normalization of the d5. So let's call this n5. Okay, so I've shown you now that for this d3 d5 system, precisely the conductivity is a constant, and that constant is essentially just the normalization of the action. But in deriving so, I showed you that there's a special point on the world volume of these d5 brains. And now I'm going to actually just study the properties of this special point, and I will just tell you a few features about it, because the properties of this actually give me some very nice physical principles that will essentially determine the result that I'm about to show you. So basically this special point is quite special because thinking about the properties of the system at this point here really determines essentially all of the physics that I'm about to tell you. So this u star is in fact a horizon on the world volume of the d5s. And I think, you know, this kind of story has arisen before, so I'm not telling you something that's totally new, but what I'm able to tell you is that it's actually very interesting physically, and especially in terms of this fluctuation, what's going on here. And actually, but to tell you why it's interesting for the fluctuations, I would like to go immediately to three and tell you something about how to look at fluctuations about this background, and how the fluctuations see the physics of this u is equal to u star horizon. So I want to say that it is actually a real horizon for the open string degrees of freedom in this system. So we all know that the fields of the brain are basically like descriptions of the open string degrees of freedom. And what's going on here is that these open string degrees of freedom will see a horizon u star, which is different to the horizon that the closed string degrees of freedom see, the background, which is the UH. And in particular, these two will have a different temperature. And that is one way of characterizing that the system is out of equilibrium. We have two systems which don't see the same temperature. Or at least that's my thinking about it. Okay? And so this...
How does this play out in the Euclidean version of the geometry? Because if you have, you see what I mean. Your background will be singular.
No, because what I'm saying is that you talk about different modes that propagate in different metrics. So there's a Euclidean regularity condition. I've just told you that this is a horizon. So now, if I want to study the temperature of that horizon, I will have to. So this is not. I mean, the horizon. It's not of a metric. It's not the background metric. I mean, I'll tell you that explicitly in a second. But I just think there are just two different regularity conditions, and they're both met, so there's no problem. Okay, so current noise.
I think what I'm interested in is that there will be a conical singularity at this affecting horizon.
Yeah, but there's also a conical singularity at the other horizon. It's just taken care of by choosing the periodicity correctly. This will be.
If you fix one, then because the temperatures are not the same, and there will be a singularity at the other. That's what I'm trying to say. I think that's
what
I'm saying.
No, okay.
It might be fine.
I'm sure it's fine. But I also think that it's just a different metric. I mean, this is not the metric capital G.
But regularity in Euclidean time is really a condition of equilibrium, and he wants to consider out of equilibrium processes.
I'm just saying that this is like.
Okay, I mean, maybe I'm not quite getting your point, but I agree with what Gary said that I'm not in equilibrium, so. That's basically another statement.
Are you seeing that? And that was my question. And then you said,
am I seeing what?
You're seeing some.
Well, let's just carry on, actually, because you will see this effective temperature. It encodes some physics. Okay, it encodes some specific physics.
Doesn't it just tell you that you have to choose the periodicity of worlds of the embedding time different than the periodicity of the background time?
Well, that's what I was trying to argue, but I don't think that it makes.
No, I think this is a non-equilibrium situation, so you shouldn't expect and probably quantities like free energy that you would calculate from that regular Euclidean solution are not important here.
Well, look. So I think this is worth thinking about in detail because it's a very generic feature of these kind of. A setup. So, for instance, also if you consider like quark diffusion, where you have a finite velocity, this will happen. If you consider circular quarks and spinning strings, this will happen. And all of these will have some emergent horizon, and that emergent horizon will have some interesting physics, which in this steady state out of equilibrium steady state actually is very easily captured by just looking at this thermodynamics on the world sheet, as I will show you now. I'll say current noise, and basically this is a kind of Langevin approach, but really what I'm going to do is I'm just going to calculate for you the Schwinger-Keldysh correlators. And note, by the way, that the way that you calculate Schwinger-Keldysh correlators in ADS-CFT is precisely by thinking very carefully about analyticity as you cross horizons on the Kruskal plane. And I'm arguing here now that you have to think about the analyticity of the horizon on the brain. Okay. That will give you Schwinger-Keldysh type thermal correlators at the effective temperature that horizon has. But okay, so to get there, we actually have to just study that the gauge field A now goes to A plus some small fluctuation. And I will set the momentum of these fluctuations to be zero for now. And I think it would be interesting to look at what would happen.
Why do you need to... because just one bit of the full Kruskal-Szeged extension of the black hole would be enough because you're calculating something.
No, so I don't think that's true, and I think I will be able to tell you. I think I will tell you why. So yes, in the end, it will boil down to calculating just the retarded function, but if you look at Schwinger-Keldysh, you get a little bit more than just the retarded function. You get the retarded function plus a relation which basically relates your, so you seem to know quite a bit, so I'm going to go into the details. Basically, the symmetric part of the, yes, exactly.
Okay.
It's basically 1 plus 2n times the imaginary part of the retarded one. And I want to derive this. I want to derive a fluctuation dissipation relation at the effective temperature. Okay, and this is exactly what's going to happen. Okay? Make you happy. So in the end, you're right. I mean, I will just extract this quantity, and from it, the physics follows. But the fact that this 2n here, which is some thermal factor, is at the effective temperature, that comes.
Ah, and that is not necessarily the Planck distribution, right? Because you're out of equilibrium.
Well, it's the distribution at the effective temperature. That's what I want to argue. So let's look at the quadratic fluctuations. Okay, for this gauge field. So some names that should be said here is that, so the Schwinger-Keldysh was worked out by Damson and Chris Herzog, And then we're also essentially trying to mimic some computations which were done for the trailing string, for quark diffusion, and some names that I'm aware of. I'm sure other people have thought about this as well, but they are Son, again, Damson and Derrick-Taney, and also Mukund Rangamani, Veronica Hubeny, and friends. And De Boer and Masaki Shigemori, actually, to be precise. So the quadratic fluctuation action is now, again, there's some constant, and it's some different constant because I will have integrated out some directions. And so it's du dt, where I've chosen also static gauge, by the way, on the well volume of this frame. So these are, you know, the well volume coordinates as well now. And then I have a metric that I will call alpha now. And what happens is that I decompose the fluctuations of this gauge field into fluctuations which are parallel to the applied field. Then I have fluctuations which are perpendicular. And the only difference is that they see a conformally rescaled metric, which is kind of important, I think, in perpendicular. And if we wanted, we could also actually study fluctuations in the time direction, which yet again have a different conformal rescaling. What I want to point out is that there is some metric alpha, which I will write down in a minute. I will not write it down explicitly, but I will write down a coordinate transform version of it. And basically, the conformal structure of this is given by the properties of this. So, you know, what I want to say is that if the parallel fluctuations see a horizon, then the other fluctuations will as well, because we know that a conformal rescaling doesn't change the conformal structure. Okay. So we will now actually look at some thermodynamic properties of this effective well volume horizon metric alpha. What do I want to say? So alpha AB is some non-diagonal metric. And even though this goes back before the days of my existence in string theory, I think this has been also studied as under the name of open string metric. Because it's essentially just, if you take two functional derivatives, as you do when you derive the quadratic action, you basically just invert that g plus f, and not just g induced. So it's a different object. And the zi of u are just some kind of, wave function renormalization factors, or perhaps, just some conformal rescalings. But they will not be important. So now, you can now study the thermodynamics of this horizon either by being stupid and computing the surface gravity, or you can talk to Sean and he'll say, why don't you diagonalize it? And actually, you can find a new coordinate system which is essentially a new time tau, which is t plus a function f of u and my good old u. And f of u, in order for this metric to be diagonal, is basically given by, 1/2 times 1 over the background horizon times the arctan u over this horizon minus the arctan hyperbolic of the same argument. And then plus 1 over u star, this special point, times the arctan of u over u star, minus the arctan hyperbolic of u over u star. And I'm just boring you with this expression because some of you might recognize it. It's basically the solution that was known, that was referred to as the trailing string solution. So, maybe you can call this sort of thing the trailing gauge field. And a lot of the structure of this equation, of these equations, are indeed similar to this diffusive quark calculations, but some factors of, you know, powers of U and so on are different, and that's essentially because of the different dimensionality of the DBI action that you're looking at. But so in these coordinates now, the metric is nice and diagonal, and it's basically given by 1 over u to the 4th minus u star to the 4th d tau squared plus u to the 4th minus u star to the 4th over u to the 4th du squared. And u star squared, to the 4th. And so I'm now actually just telling you the result of this computation over there. That's actually equal to uh to the 4th plus d squared. And everywhere here, by the way, there are going to be factors of the ADS length r, which I've set to 1. So particular, I want you to notice that this is greater than uh to the 4th. And also that I've been able to reformulate this problem for the fluctuations as being now a problem where you move in the metric where I don't ever need to think about uh. And I'm just thinking about u star.
Right. The limit that e is equal to 0, these two are equal.
Exactly.
One shouldn't exist, right?
No, that's not true. Basically, what happens in the limit that e goes to 0 is that you study the... So you get some kind of regular singular points. And the only condition is that as these two horizons come together, then, say, in-boundary conditions become in-boundary conditions. So the sum of the two indices at the two singular points should become the new correct index. And that's indeed happening. You can check that in detail.
Stupid question.
Yeah.
You call it an horizon, but it seems that the time circle is blowing up instead of going to 0 at u equals u star. Unless I'm...
Redshift is not going to 0.
I hope I didn't just... wrote the wrong...
Maybe du star.
No, maybe I just made it... Maybe I just wrote a typo, because I did go through this, and I studied the regularity of this, and basically what happens is what should happen. Let me see, what did I do wrong?
Maybe you switched.
Yeah, maybe I just brought the inverse metric, right?
Yeah, something like that.
In fact, I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Very good. So, let's just call that u. A beta plus.
Yeah,
that's better. It's fine. No, so thanks. That's a good point, of course. So if you expand that now near u is equal to u star, you get the usual condition that, you know, it vanishes linearly at u star, this guy. And the factor with which it vanishes from regularity is 4 pi times the temperature of that horizon. So doing that computation, what I get is that actually pi times t star, so I've now introduced a third temperature of this talk, is basically equal to u star, and that is equal to t squared plus pi t to the 4th, all taken to the 1 over 4. And basically, if I were to wave my hands a lot now, I would be done, because I have now a temperature which contains all the limits that I want. And I could just say, now let's do some thermal noise calculation. And you can just guess what the result would be. It's noise at this temperature, T star. But let's actually do it. So note immediately that the limit that the temperature goes to 0 of this T star is square root of E. And note that the limit if the field goes to 0 of the effective temperature is equal to T, which is also related to Amit's comment, who's now left. Okay, so this is my interpretation of this is that I want to say that this is actually giving you the effects of Schwinger pair production. And this is a purely thermal result. From a physical perspective, but from the mathematical perspective of the physics on this D5 probe frame, all of it is just thermal physics, but it's thermal physics at this effective temperature. Okay, and that's somehow the nice thing that happens in this probe brain setup, that a computation which was very complicated, or a similar computation that was very complicated in the superfluid insulator case, really tease out from strong correlations the square root e dependence. Here is just thermophysics of the problem. Oh, there's a meter. Good. So let's go on to this larger approach. So basically, the physical picture is now that this is a thermal horizon and it will Hawking radiate. So on the D5 frame, we have Hawking radiation. At temperature, T star. And that Hawking radiation will somehow thermally excite the fluctuations of this gauge field. And so basically that induces stochastic equations or stochastic motion on the current fluctuation and the gauge field fluctuation. What I mean by that is essentially this picture that Son and Tenney put forward, where you think of they had a probe string, and we really the role of the fluctuations of the probe string are played here by the fluctuations of the gauge field, and those fluctuations of the gauge field will have some boundary conditions to take into account this. To heuristically take into account this Hawking radiation, which are essentially stochastic boundary conditions near the horizon. And then you can use the boundary propagator to propagate this into the boundary. And you will find that the boundary endpoint of this also has a stochastic equation. But that's a heuristic picture. I think actually that by going through this Schwinger-Keldysh approach on the boundary, you basically capture all that without having to resort to this nice but heuristic picture of something. So so one can, and the details of this are a bit painful, so I will actually not go through it, but one can get Schwinger-Keldysh correlators as usual for the fluctuations on the D5. Okay, when I say as usual, let me just sketch what one does. Is one has these horizons, and one has to be very careful. So one looks at the entire Kruskal plane now of the black hole on the D5, and like basically Andrew showed us, one has to be very careful in being able to define in and out nodes with positive and negative frequency that are analytic as you cross from the right quadrant to the left quadrant of the Kruskal plane. And that basically leads one to insert various factors of e to the minus omega over 2t of this horizon in equations. And basically, I think the point is that this is something like minus 1 to the I. 4 pi t star, if I'm not totally wrong. And so these factors are basically necessary to have analytical modes on the full Kruskal plane. And from that, you essentially find all of Schwinger-Keldysh plus this KMS relation. Or as I want to call it, basically boundary fluctuation dissipation. And that is that the two-point function, and now I want to think of the two-point function of, let's just say that so the symmetric part of the Schwinger-Keldysh correlator is equal to minus 1 plus 2n star times the retarded part of the Schwinger-Keldysh, where n star is now, and this is different from what you would have done just in the background without the probe frames, is e to the minus beta star, so the inverse effective temperature times 1 over 1 minus e to the inverse star omega. So it's some thermal factors, but at the temperature of the effective horizon.
I have a question right now. The warp factor for the VC
I'm confusing myself. But I do have an alert audience, so thank you. No, there isn't actually. That's. Oh wait, what are we saying? You think it's no? You think it's this? I got lots of views. Well.
I'm partly asking because usually in ABS the Hawking radiation that there is bounce, statement was it bounces off the boundary, comes back, and you end up in equilibrium with it. And so you don't really describe it as Hawking radiation. And here you're describing it that way.
But that is not something new. That is essentially the picture of Sonnentini. So that the Hawking radiation does induce stochastic boundary conditions in that case for the trailing string.
But that would have been if the string had the quark had a finite mass, which meant that the string stopped before it got to infinity. And so I'm.
Oh, you think
sure
that this
that fits into this picture?
Oh, I see. So what you're saying is that if it were to go all the way to infinity,
in their picture, if the mass goes to infinity, the fluctuations go away.
If the mass goes, but what if the mass goes to zero?
The mass goes to zero.
Yeah. Because that's theta equal to zero there, right?
Well, the quark mass is more like the quark mass is more like where this probe brain is. So I wouldn't say that
maybe I'm misunderstanding, but they have a string,
right,
and they look at fluctuate modes on that string bouncing around.
Yeah.
It's important that the string stop at some finite radius. That gives it a finite mass, and then the end of the string can fluctuate around.
Mm-hmm.
If the end of the string goes all the way to infinity, those fluctuations get damped out and go to zero. In your case, isn't the point that you have now a brain that extends out to some radius, and you're looking at these as fluctuations on the brain?
But
your brain goes to infinity, so
yeah,
that
exactly.
Angle I don't think matters.
Yeah, so that's a bit puzzling to me. I think I need to think about that a little bit. What I can say is that, I have not filled in all the steps for this heuristic argument, but what I have done is I just calculated the Stringer-Keldysh correlators, okay, and they give you some fluctuation-dissipation relation. Now, where did these fluctuations come from? Apparently it looks like my heuristic picture is not.
Probably what the fluctuations of the gauge field on the brain, maybe not
yeah.
The brain itself. Those gauge fields
sure.
Exist.
Sure, but I think that Rob is saying.
They're actually moving the endpoint of the string around.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't need to do that.
I don't do that, no. So, I mean, the role of the endpoint of the string is played by the fluctuation of the gauge field.
How these fluctuations are.
And that gauge field get kicked around by the Hawking quantum.
Absolutely, that is my picture. But I think what Rob and Eva are saying that wouldn't get transmitted all the way to the boundary. That's confusing me a bit because what you're saying is that for the quark, where you don't have to go all the way to the boundary.
Normalizable model.
Right. I think the difference may be between normalizable and non-normalizable.
Right. But also because these fluctuations, by the way, are one thing maybe that will might make you happier. These fluctuations, of course, are marginal, as in they go to a constant at the boundary, which is different from the endpoint of the string, which has a divergent part.
It's the massless mode.
Yeah, it's the massless mode.
But it goes to a constant.
Yes. So maybe that's what will make it work out.
That's still not normalized from one move.
Marginal.
No, it costs me infinite energy.
Right.
Can we just not mention simultaneously?
Well, or I just kill the non-normalizable mode and just look at the expectation value. So that's something interesting to think about.
So the setup thing is that there is some Hawking radiation in the brain, which basically these quantas become equilibrium, with that black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a log to boundary property which takes this to the boundary.
Yep.
So, and then that's the computation that's being done there.
Yep.
Calculating should be Kalish.
I think that's a heuristic picture of why you have some Lonergan equation, but Tringa-Kalish is the calculation that thinks about the boundary conditions at the horizon on the world gene.
Knowing that you have a black hole with a temperature T star at equilibrium, and in this quantum at equilibrium with that black hole, mm-hmm. then it would basically automatically
KMS relation
without
making computing that. Well, that's what I want to say. That's because you think of this as really thermal physics and the field theory. That's exactly what I wanted to do here. But from the point of view of if you just had the field theory and you didn't have that bulk picture of having the effective horizon, you wouldn't think that something like a KMS relation or a fluctuation dissipation relation applies. And what I was saying right now, with probably wrongly appealing to Sonnantini, was just giving a heuristic picture of how this stochastic boundary condition does get induced in the boundary. But I think I need to think about that a little bit more carefully. So those are good points. Okay. So in view of the time, let me just tell you the result. So how do I do this best? Well, you then actually you basically think about setting up a Langevin equation on the boundary where you have a noise term, and let me call that noise term psi mu, and essentially that's the forcing term for these fluctuations, psi mu of t, and what this is given as is actually this minus 1 plus 2 n star times the imaginary part of the retarded 2-point correlation function, and this is now the 2-point correlation function of the current. Okay, so this is how this relates to the current noise. So as we were already mentioning in this discussion now, is that the current fluctuation will be the normalizable mode of the state field fluctuation. So by studying essentially the two-point function of the dual operator of this, this is precisely what I extract. I extract the two-point function of the current fluctuation. And this gives you the noise term, noise, stochastic noise term, on the boundary. Okay, and so what you can then do is you can actually get this quantity Sj, which people call noise power, and it's just defined as the integral of the d omega dk of that thing in momentum space of essentially this thermal factor. And let me just tell you that this is the cot over omega dt star times this imaginary part of the retarded JJ function. And basically, by changing variables within this integral, you can actually immediately say that this is the same as T star times some phi of, T star over T. So, or I could have written it as T times some function phi of, I should call it now phi tilde, times T star over T. And so to make progress, what you actually need to do is you need to calculate this JJ two-point function. And for general values of the argument omega, I've not been able to do this, but I will be able to do it numerically, for instance. But what you can do is you can actually do a small omega expansion and take the leading part, sorry, I mean actually small omega hat, which is the dimensionless constant. And actually, in this small omega expansion, if I go to order omega squared, then I find that Sj is actually given. So Sj, I divide it by the whole volume of pi 2,1 because it's an extensive quantity as defined. And that is actually now twice times the conductivity, nonlinear conductivity in 2 plus 1 dimensions, times T star. So I think that's a very nice result because it's very reminiscent of the previous result, only that we, I think, did a little better because we now have this T star, which basically immediately interpolates between the two limits, which I told you about before.
So the Einstein relation, but non-equilibrium version of that thing, because
That's right.
Yeah, because one is
because I'm plugging in the non-equilibrium conductivity here. That's a nice way of looking at it. What else did I want? Let me summarize by giving you some table of things that we know about on the condensed matter side, on this ADS side, and then some questions that this opens up. But, so maybe I should clear two boards. So this will maybe take 5 minutes. I don't think I had anything I wanted to say there. So, conclusion. I can give you like a grand history of physics conclusion, which amused me at some point. So I think we basically used general relativity, which Einstein came up in 1915, put some quantum physics to it, and went back to 1905 when Einstein actually derived Brownian motion. So we've certainly gone on a, well, almost closed time-like curve now. Okay, so we have something like the condensed matter side. It's also depressing sometimes to see how good Einstein really was. So we have, basically here we looked at the 2 plus 1 dimensional Wilson-Fisher fixed point. And here we look at the D3 D5 system. This is the 2 plus 1 dimensional theory. Here we're also looking at large N. And this large N, even though it's vector-like, basically the physical idea behind using large N is that we have order of one degrees of freedom C, the electric field, and the rest of them are basically some kind of bath in which I can dissipate heat into. Here we have large NC, but only NF much less than NC degrees of freedom C, the electric field. So the role of the large N, even though it's a different kind of large N, is physically exactly the same. Here we have, basically, we had to include explicitly, and I didn't go through that, but we had to explicitly include in the Boltzmann equation Schwinger pair production. Here, in fact, this applied E gives us a world volume horizon at an effective temperature, which includes this Schwinger term, but now as a sort of an effective thermal effect. Okay, so this Schwinger term is basically here. And now, another result of having large N, let me put it here, is that we can have a non-equilibrium steady state. And the same is actually true here. So let me just indicated like that. And I gave you some interpretation.
The string of production, what is it you're saying? You're saying the pairs are produced in the screen, the DL, and then...
All I'm saying is that I have some... Sorry, I interrupted you when you unfinished, so can you say again, please?
So you have this background field, and then you're saying that you just screen it, and it's about the actual field, therefore, do you think you have back to the screen and produces, or are you pumping it back up?
Well, I'm not doing anything explicitly here. This is essentially what you have to do on this side. So you have to explicitly calculate the Schwinger pair production rate and then use those produced particles also in the Boltzmann equation, you know, with the usual scattering integral. But here, this just comes out. I have a term E squared. And just comparing this to that, I want to say that this is somehow a strongly coupled version of that. So what the physical... What the precise physical picture is of particle production, I didn't think about.
Well, I'm just confused by where the body
is. The effective temperature is just generated by the energy in the string of pairs. If they're producing stuff, it's somehow effectively doing that.
Yeah, but in the bulk, there should be a picture like Eva says, maybe. Well, maybe actually we can.
And also, you would expect to get this pair production contribution to the system.
And what can we actually postpone that to the very end, because I have just a few more points, and then I'm very happy to hear about this. But let me just finish up. Okay, so then basically you have fluctuations, and they're described by a quantum Boltzmann Langevin approach, where you explicitly have to take into account of these Schwinger pairs. And here we basically just get the usual fluctuation dissipation. But at effective temperature, C star. And so this is sort of what I want to say, perhaps one of the general guiding principles, which maybe one can entertain the notion that out of equilibrium systems, maybe you can think about a general class of out of equilibrium systems by actually having just the conventional fluctuation dissipation relation, but at some effective temperature. Okay. That's definitely a new notion which was implicit in some condensed matter work, but it was never explicitly stated. And I think it would actually be quite edifying to think about that. So now, just to finish, I'll read out to you. I think what's new is that we have a unified treatment of this thermal and quantum contributions to the system here. And that's encoded in the effective horizon. And we get the full interpolating function in the current noise in this system, which also hasn't been done before. And so what one might do next is one could ask, what other systems could this apply to? What other kind of fluctuations can one look at? For instance, one can also actually think, is there maybe some experiment which could look at the interpolating function and see how it behaves? And maybe, just maybe, it looks like this one that we derived. You know, then one would have to say something like, okay, this is a universal result. It's something very universal about these out of equilibrium systems, but that would be extremely nice. And on a technical level, it would be nice to go away from the probe limit, perhaps, and look at the time-dependent process. One can also maybe say the word quenches here, which also could be of interest in this context. But I think I'm already out of time, so I will leave it here. Thanks for your attention.
So another context in which you see this unification of this thermal and quantum effect in pair creation is just the usual charged black hole, and if you have charged fields around, right? So if you look at Hawking radiation from a Reiser-Norton black hole, even when the temperature goes to zero, you can get radiation from the Schwinger pair creation near the horizon. And when the temperature is big, you know, the Hawking radiation is dominated. It's thermal.
Right.
So this raises a question. Maybe somebody already knows the answer. I mean, rather than do the usual quantum calculation where you see these two effects, you can ask, is there a sort of new effective metric that a charged particle would see so that it would have a horizon,
right,
so that you would get all the radiation just from an effective temperature? Yeah.
So I was going to ask you that because what you described first is something which is definitely not in the other equilibrium state. So maybe that, you know, maybe by looking at this effective metric, then we would get a similar story. So we would have to introduce a new metric which these degrees of freedom C, just like here.
This is a new metric whose geodesics are the same as a charged particle orbits of Reiser-Nordström. That doesn't sound hard to make up. Mm-hmm. And then you can just see whether you get the horizon.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting.
So clearly
what you feel with radio here is
it's not literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also because we're studying this defect really, and here it's detailed and definitely.
Sorry. Big contribution coming from E.
Yeah.
So in order to have an interpretation in terms of, just correct me if I'm wrong, don't you think it should be should be exponentially suppressed?
But it is. I think when they were looking for a mass, it's easier in a massless case.
Yeah.
I think when it definitely gets smaller, right?
Actually, yes, sorry, so I mentioned.
Because, I mean, this doesn't look suppressed.
So I didn't say that also. I think also relaxing this embedding that the theta vanishes would be nice, but we did this because then you have complete analytic control, and I think this you get some kind of nonlinear embedding profile, and you would have to do numerics, which I'm not opposed to, but you know, being here for 3 weeks, I didn't have time for that.
But can we go back to Eva's question? I mean, when I think of a temperature, I'm just spraying out energy. But somehow you'd really like to see a current being generated that is sort of screening the
current in what sense?
Field.
Yeah.
Are you,
I mean, the current that flows radially, or what?
No,
saying?
Not radially. I mean, this is in the X direction.
Yeah.
So you're pair producing charges that screen the field. Mm-hmm. Maybe what you're...
The doctor doesn't say that. I mean, this is for... It's E dot equals J. That's the effect. It's just in Maxwell's equations. The boundary condition doesn't satisfy... The boundary field doesn't satisfy Maxwell's equations. That's so... Right. I think
it's...
The boundary field doesn't satisfy...
Because
there's
a source term?
Well, just
by hand. Yeah, you just put it by hand and kept it
called. Sure.
It's just the... Yeah. Well, or... Well, I mean, it also fluctuates, but...
So there's a second order effect which will tell you how E changes as a function.
Okay. Back reaction of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
That's suppressed now as NF over NC.
So a bit like, maybe a bit like you can take into account this screening rate from the
holographic
system. No, you still have dynamical charges and they're still responding to the field.
Yeah, I mean,
Oh, you're saying they don't generate the electricity?
Yeah, it's like
you have this steady state configuration. You have this E that's driving everything. Everything is screening. You wait till the system is completely in a steady state, and now you measure the effect of E in this steady state system. It's not like you have a dynamical screening where the value of E changes as a function.
I think that's what John
because it's NF over NC.
Just effectively the coefficient of E squared plus B squared is infinite because it's not dynamical.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the boundaries on the dynamical.
Yeah.
Of course.
Is there any notion of entropy that you could associate with this background with two horizons? This has also come up in other contexts.
Well, you know what? I mean, I can't answer that because I didn't come to a conclusion. But I was thinking about this point also because I wanted to get an estimate for the time scale here. So if you think about the time scale, you want to think about stuff like the heat capacity, which you know you can get through thermodynamic arguments. So I don't know, but that's clearly something interesting. I mean, general principles in this case tell you that the time scale should go like NC over NF and goes to infinity in the protein. But
I would have liked to make that more precise by thinking about it.
No.
In the, on this side, on the Wilson Fisher side, is there some equivalent relation to this pi b star? Is there some, like is there, I mean, the p effective as a function of E?
Yeah.
Is it a good function from the free theory calculation?
So that I'm not really in a position to, well, basically maybe what's the role of this effective temperature on the Boltzmann-Langevin side? So, and I mean, I can only, well, probably you will listen to this. I can quote only Andrew, who said that it looked like an effective temperature, but we didn't have a good physical reason to say it is an effective temperature. But they did call it that in the paper. So you probably have to take it up with him. But I'm happy enough that from our side, it's totally obvious that it is an effective temperature, and it gives a right limit on its points.
Because if it is a similar form, you know, like, I mean, you would think that, ideally speaking, if you could do this computation, so you should do this computation in some kind of a vascular theory, in brains in vascular theory, whatever they mean. Mm-hmm. And whatever is the analog of the DB action there should give that T effective.
Yeah.
So if the form is similar, you know, you can actually say that it's some indirect evidence that
DB can identify some detailed balance in that quantum Boltzmann approach, then you should be able to tease out the real effective temperature.
Yeah. So the question is, what is the T effective? Does it look very similar to this? So that's because.
Yeah, you mean what if we had, I mean, no, these guys just wanted to think of T effective as square root of E. They don't put this contribution here. But they also only work in the limit where you can ignore that. So it's entirely possible that they will get some T effective which has a different interpolating form, of course.
No, I just want to say that analysis of the Boltzmann equation probably is not really a good way of thinking about this problem, because that's a very bigly coupled picture. So you have quasi particles interacting, mean free path is long, and everything. And this is a strongly coupled mess.
Maybe I'm just
Boltzmann probably not
interpreting your question and what I want to hear, because I
definitely wanted to be decoupled answer.
So I definitely wanted to say that this may be some more general principle for non-equilibrium steady states, and then you might be able to identify it also for weakly coupled systems.
Just thank you, man. Yeah.